Voters re-elected Virge Bernero by a wide margin to a third term as mayor of Lansing yesterday, and they gave him what he wanted on the city council by replacing his nemesis, Brian Jeffries, with Judy Brown Clark. Now, incumbents Kathy Dunbar, Tina Houghton, and Jessica Yorko were retained, and Lansing voters also passed a measure to decriminalize marijuana. In East Lansing, appointee Kathleen Boyle won the right to fill out the balance of a term on the city council, and there will be two newcomers, Ruth Beyer and Susan Woods, on the council as well. Here to help us analyze yesterday's election result, Elaine Kulhanek, editor of Community Conversations at the Lansing State Journal. Hi, Elaine.
Hi.
And Walt Sorg, longtime political observer, former Democratic candidate for the State House, who writes about local politics now for the Lansing City Pulse. Hi, Walt.
Good morning.
Good to have you both with us. Virge Bernero will serve a third term as mayor in Lansing, which doesn't surprise many. Perhaps more importantly, City Council veteran Brian Jeffries, a frequent opponent of the administration, won't be on the council. Elaine, what does that mean?
Well, it obviously gives Virge more support, although if things stay lined up the way they have been in the past 2 years, it'll be a 4-4 split, possibly. That gives him certainly more strength than a 5-3, but it's not complete control by any means. They'll still have to find a way to work together better than they have,
Walt?
I think.
Well, clearly it's Virge was the big winner yesterday. I found it fascinating. Brian Jeffries didn't just lose. He lost decisively. In all but one precinct, he finished third, which for an incumbent is just absolutely amazing. He did carry one precinct over in the Colonial Village area, barely. But the top two women were almost neck and neck. I think the margin between the two of them was like 40 votes.
And Elaine, you've got some numbers as to how the vote broke down. Why don't you touch on that?
Well, Judy Brown Clark had 8,510 and Kathy Dunbar had 8,426. So it's a little more than, you know, than 40 votes, but it was very close. And between the two of them, they did, one or the other of them won almost every precinct in the city. Brian was consistently third across the board, except for that one precinct where he did poll first. I think that was 4th Ward, Precinct 32 is what I wrote down, assuming.
Yeah, it's the Colonial Village area.
Yeah, so. And I was really surprised by that, I think other people were too. I think there were a number of folks who suspected that Brian Jeffries would be returned and that Judy Brown Clark might beat Kathy Dunbar rather than, you know, both of them getting through. So I think that is very good news for Virge, and I think it means that voters were paying attention to his message of, please give me council members who will work with me.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Mayor Bernero's response to this change on the city council.
I don't need the constant griping and sniping that I get, the kind of petty stuff that we get bogged down in. And so hopefully this is a clear sign to the rest of the council that the voters have had it with that.
Walt, I'm curious, how intent do you think voters were on remaking the city council this time around? Was that really uppermost in a lot of voters' minds, or was this also a matter of just an attractive candidate, fairly well known in the community, whose time has come?
I think it was more a vote on Virge, and I think it was also his organization. I was working as a poll worker over in the Southwest Side, and the only people that were out there campaigning were handing out slate tickets on behalf of the mayor with the mayor's slate of candidates, and voters were walking in with that, and I think that played a big role because Virge, as you can see, he really didn't even have serious opposition with Harold Lehman, and his popularity really helped an awful lot, but his organization helped an incredible amount as well, because it's a low turnout election. We only had a 17% turnout, and organization is a big part of that. And I think it was more that than a specific time for change. The other thing I did want to mention, though, is that I felt bad for Brian Jeffries because he got slimed in some anonymous campaign attacks, which I thought were way over the line. And it's the kind of thing that we really don't need in our politics. We see it too much in city politics, especially where you get these last-minute anonymous attacks.
Were these robocalls, Walt? Robocalls or radio spots or what?
Well, there's robocalls. There was an over-the-weekend mailing that said, that had the headline, "If it smells like a rat," and referred inaccurately to an incident that happened 8 years ago that basically they misrepresented something that had happened regarding a union bug on a billboard. We made it look like that Brian was anti-union. Those sorts of things go on. And there's very little you can do about it. They were totally anonymous, which is the part I find really offensive. If candidates want to go on the attack against each other, great. Let them have at it, but admit to who's doing the attacking. When it's anonymous stuff like that, I think it's just pathetic.
Now, in the 4th Ward, we had an interesting race pitting incumbent Jessica Yorko against challenger Chong Anna Canfora. I'm wondering if voters in the 4th were also getting the cards that you saw in Southwest Lansing that just had the slate of Mayor Bernero's candidates on them. At any rate, Jessica Yorko prevailed there. Elaine, what can you tell us about the 4th?
That was one of the areas of the city that had some of the highest turnout. That ward had 20% turnout, actually almost 21% turnout yesterday. And it was, by all accounts, a very hotly contested race, from two, you know, vibrant candidates who probably represent the young creatives that, you know, everybody thinks that the city must appeal to. It was not necessarily that close of a race. Jessica had 2,353 votes and Chong Anna had 1,974. So, I think people very clearly, you know, knew what they wanted to do there.
Walt, any indication about how concerned the Bernero camp was about Yorko losing?
Oh, there is a lot of concern about that, although I think they were feeling more comfortable in the last week. I think the key to it there was that both of them have tremendous backgrounds and qualifications for the job, but Jessica Yorko's background is more working in the community, working as a neighborhood organizer and a community organizer, and Chong Anna Canfora's camp history is more working at the state level, working as a fundraiser and as an organizer in state campaigns, and that probably tipped the balance. Plus, the Canfora campaign had a lot of negative aspects to it. On the record, she stood behind it, but that sometimes doesn't play real well.
Let's talk just briefly about newcomer Judy Brown Clark as well. What does her election mean? She was pictured with the other Bernero supporters on the mayor's Facebook page, along with Jessica Yorko, Tina Houghton, and Kathy Dunbar. She's obviously seen as being in the mayor's camp, Elaine.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like everybody, even, you know, Kathy and Tina and Jessica will all say they don't agree with the mayor on everything. And I'm certain she has not promised to agree with the mayor on everything. But I think that she will be a fresh voice. I think she's wonderfully qualified, very energetic, very well educated, great discipline, in her personal and professional life, obviously from her record as an Olympic athlete all the way through to her educational achievements and professional achievements, really a stellar candidate. And I think she will be a big breath of fresh air on the council.
Walt, care to weigh in on Judy Brown Clark?
Yeah, an interesting sign was she did not participate in the group hug party last night down at the Nut House, which had the rest of the Bernero slate there, including the mayor and three council candidates. She had her own party about two blocks down the street, which I thought was interesting. A lot of people I've talked to say that this is the beginning of the Judy Brown Clark for mayor campaign.
What, is there any indication? Go ahead, Elaine.
I heard that from someone yesterday, too. I just think that there's been a, you know, 8 years of bickering and infighting between, you know, the mayor and the council, and I think that a lot of people in the community, including influential people in the business, you know, in leadership community, would like to see the city move beyond that. And when you see such a highly qualified candidate, you see a prospect there. It does not surprise me that people are already, you know, mentioning the mayor word with her name.
Here is a question that has not come up on this program, and I need to ask it now. Is it known that whether or not the Bernero administration reached out to Judy Brown Clark and tried to recruit her as a candidate? Do we know that?
Yes, she was encouraged by the mayor to run, and she was encouraged to run at large. At one point, she was considering running in the 4th Ward. She does not consider herself a Verge candidate. She was the one candidate who had the United Support of Labor, which is interesting. What I found impressive about Judy in the interviews we did for the City Pulse editorial endorsements was she's got a really good understanding of human dynamics and how to get people to work together. And that probably dates back to her days as an athlete, where even though she was an individual track star, she was a part of a team as well. And I think that has the potential for her to play very well. If she can be a unifying force in the city, that would be a real breath of fresh air, given all the histrionics we've had between the ninth and the 10th floor.
How influential was her spouse in this, Judge Hugh Clark? I mean, did he play a role in mobilizing a lot of votes here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely in the background. No question that there was a very heavy African-American vote. I was working in a precinct that was predominantly African-American, and she won that one very heavily. But that's not to say that she was the black candidate for council, because she won most precincts in the city of the three candidates. She and Kathy Dunbar split them up, and it didn't really matter where it was. The fact that her husband is really well wired into the political establishment locally, that helped quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that gives her a leg up in context and, you know, background and things. But I think she's a force to be reckoned with, and she will tell you, is, you know, when their youngest is, you know, approaching the stage of eventually leaving the nest, and she looked across the living room at Hugh and said, "Boy, I got to find something to do." She will say that.
It is going to be very interesting to see how her voting record plays out, though, here. She appeared with the mayor and Yorko Houghton and Dunbar on the mayor's Facebook page. But, I mean, they all claim not to disagreeing with the mayor on occasion. It's just going to be very interesting to watch how her voting record actually plays out, won't it, Walt?
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's going to be more the dynamics of how the people get along. The fact that she was able to get the full labor endorsement, I think, is really very important in a contested race like that. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, so she had both the UAW and the Labor Council, is what you're saying.
Right.
And the Labor Council were the folks who lined up with Jeffries and Camfora, and the UAW lined up with the mayor's slate. So she got them both, and that is a big deal.
That sounds like she could be a person in the middle on a lot of issues.
I think, yeah, her influence is going to be very important on the council.
Let's move on to marijuana decriminalization. The measure on the ballot was approved by a 20-point margin. Did passage surprise you, Elaine Kolhanek, or did the margin surprise you? What do you take away from this?
The margin did not surprise me. Passage did not surprise me. What it actually means on the ground for people who want to smoke a joint, I don't really have a clue, because I clearly state law is still in place. And I saw somebody interviewed on TV last night, actually in Jackson, which passed the same law, saying our police don't want to lose their state and federal funding, so they are going to keep enforcing state and federal law, even though it passed. Now I don't know how it'll actually play out everywhere, but very confusingly written too, because less than an ounce, but the criminal statutes are written in grams. Not ounces, and you know, so it's really hard to get your arms around how many people were arrested in Lansing last year who wouldn't be arrested under this, because they don't track the statistics that way.
Okay, let's listen now to Jeff Hank, an attorney who was the chief organizer of the decriminalization campaign. Here he is last night.
This is a historic night. I think it's a landslide by all considerations. It sends a message not only to our local politicians, but to the politicians at the state level, that it's time to do something.
Well, Walt Sorg, what do you make of the decriminalization vote?
Oh, that's exactly what it was. Send them a message. In terms of the actual impact in the city of Lansing, it means nothing. The prosecutor wasn't interested in these cases anyway, and if Stuart Dunnings isn't interested, nothing's going to happen on prosecution. But it does send a message across the street to the state capitol building.
But it sounds like it does not resolve any number of enforcement questions on the ground, as Elaine alluded to.
Well, enforcement's up to the prosecutor. If the prosecutor doesn't want the case, the police aren't going to waste their time making the arrest. It's as simple as that. And Stuart Dunnings has not indicated any great desire to handle simple possession cases. If it comes up as an ancillary charge and something more serious, it might show up. But I think as a practical matter, it really doesn't mean anything. We're not going to have a hash bash down on the state capitol steps.
Let's talk about the second ward, Tina Houghton and Charles Hoffmeyer, to get back to the city council contest. Houghton, really no problem there. He had some interesting numbers, though, Elaine, as far as the turnout goes in the second.
Yeah,
the
second ward was really low turnout, 15%, and also had, this is just sad, and I'm second ward precinct 21, and we had pretty good turnout in my precinct, but second ward precinct 16, shame on you, 6.5% turnout.
Wow.
Lowest turnout in the city, I believe.
What did you make of the contest there in the second, Walt?
There wasn't one. Charles Hoffmeyer didn't stage a campaign. His campaign consisted basically of getting on the ballot and then setting up a website. He didn't do door-to-door, didn't do yard signs, didn't do any advertising, didn't do any mailing, was showed up occasionally in neighborhood associations. The funny part is when I wrote about it in City Pulse, he sent me a very angry email after I said that he basically had dropped out of the campaign. But he wasn't doing anything that a candidate does. Very nice man, very well-intentioned, but there was never a question about Tina. Mark, I know we're running short of time. One thing that I did want to get into, I think it's really very significant. We had several millage proposals on the ballot around Ingham County, and they all passed.
Yes, yes. Okemos, Williamston.
Yeah,
they were a couple.
Yeah, yeah, it was a sinking fund for maintenance in Williamston. Weberville was for maintenance. Perry, their entire operating millage was up for renewal. Without that, they would have probably dropped athletics and buses, but those both passed very overwhelmingly. And then Okemos really supported a proposal to extend the current millage so they go out and basically equip every student with a tablet, probably an iPad, which is something that's happening more and more in education. It's kind of been one of my pet projects on the side is promoting that sort of thing. But the Okemos vote was over 70%. And then one other vote that I thought was fascinating, in Charlotte, they had a city income tax on the ballot. It went down 4-1.
Holy cow. Okay.
And the city council member, who was one of those who put it on the ballot, was running for mayor, and he got beat.
For the record, we will point out that Susan Woods and Ruth Beyer in East Lansing replaced Vic Loomis and Kevin Baird on the city council, and Kathleen Boyd, who was also an appointee, won election to fill the balance of her term. We want to thank Michigan Radio's Steve Carmody for help with the audio here on this morning's segment, and we want to thank both of our guests. Elaine Culhannock is Community Conversations Editor at the Lansing State Journal. Walt Sorg writes about local politics for the Lansing City Pulse. Elaine and Walt, thank you.
Have a great day. I'm going back to bed.
Thanks.